One of the members who got money, customers, put it in full. Honorable, hardworking committee members. And one hardworking official. The other says, don't have your assessment forms. And I don't know where I had it. I only know about the member and one official. It's in the office of the chair. Now the others, I don't have your assessment form. Yeah. And let me welcome our ambassador from Gerco and of course Advocate Mashaba, as well Ambassador Shope and Ambassador Asma. If an asthma you might be colored. Yeah. We are going to take a discussion on the tripartite free trade area that was signed last year, as well as the Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiative. And just for me, if only you can make a very good difference between what the PICI does and what the PIDA does. I'm always concerned about the PG and the KIDA. For a long time, I thought it's one thing. But when you do the presentation, just to assist me. Now, I don't know who is going to make a presentation. Who's the first one? I'm told it's Ambassador Chompe.
Yeah, I just need
to tell who's going to unlock
the
leader. Oh. And you don't have that enough. Ambassador, over to you. It's Sunega.
Yes.
No, thank you, Chairman, and honorable members. And again, thank you for the opportunity for us to come and talk to some of the issues that we think are of cardinal importance to us as a country. Chair, just very briefly, we will try to talk to the regional and the continental integration processes and more or less where it is that they are. Obviously, we always have to respect that our foreign policy is anchored on what the domestic needs of our country are, what our priorities are, what it is that we need in order to move, first of all, our people forward, integrating them into the national economy, integrating the country into the regional and continental and global economy. And just to give an initial background on the regional integration process. Obviously, our point of departure was one where we thought that what the continent needs is that process of emancipation. That process of emancipation from what was colonial domination, because it was that colonial domination of the countries on the continent that deprived all of our people of what was developed. fundamentally their needs. In the South region, in the Southern African Development Community, which has about 14 countries, and there is now a request by Burundi to join SADC. In the Southern African Development Community, we our countries agreed some years back that we should have a timeline of integration. Now, this timeline is usually referred to as a linear timeline because it seems that one foot must be followed by another. And in this case, what we said agreed to was that we would have a free trade area by 2008 to be followed by a customs union by 2010, to be followed by a common market by 2015, and monetary union by 2016. Beginning with the free trade area, we launched the free trade area, but none of the other milestones were achieved, largely to the extent that a number of the tenants of the free trade area were themselves not achieved. So when we launched the free trade area in SADC, there were some countries that did not sign the trade protocol, in this case for Angola and the DRC. But the free trade area basically meant that we would start the process of removing non-tariff and tariff barriers between us. However, the process has been very slow, and only as of now about 15% of trade is actually inter-regional. And one of the, if we can look at the fifth slide, it gives you some of the figures of what trade is happening like between the countries of the region. You will see that Angola generally is behind South Africa. That's because Angola is the second largest economy in the sub-region, worth about $100 billion US, when South Africa is about 230-250. So there are some figures there in terms of what the exports imports are and who our trading partners are. But the regional integration process has had a number of challenges. This has been witnessed in a number of fora, including when we had some of our SADC summits. In particular, the SADC summit that we had in Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, where we were supposed as a region to adopt a revised regional development plan, which is known as the Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan, the RISDP. So we could not adopt the RISDP, primarily because there was a sense among some countries in the region that the three pillars of the free trade area, in other words, one being market access, one being industrialization, one being infrastructure development, there was a sense that what was being front-loaded was market access. And the challenge with that is that a number of the countries in the sub-region are actually not industrial economies. And therefore, accelerating market access really meant accelerating access for South African products in the sub-region and not the other way around. So there was a sense that before we adopt a revised RISDP, we actually needed to front-load both industrialization and infrastructure development. So the revised RISDP that was adopted at the following summit actually did that. Now, one of the other challenges to achieving the free trade area, I talked about market access. Now, there's this animal that they call derogation. And derogation basically means that when there are agreements among countries to lower tariffs, and someday the country comes back and wants to increase the tariffs and say, no, I need to re-increase the tariffs on food. Those are known as derogations. And a number of member states have been requesting derogations, and that is really meant difficulty in fully implementing the free trade area. Clearly, derogations or tariffs are a source of income. And in some instances, it has been the case that rather than protecting a particular target, it is really just an attempt at raising the rate. So, and then also a challenge.
So derogations are tariffs or are increasing tariffs?
We agree, for example, that when we are importing tires, I'm going to lower the tariff on the tires. But how after 7 months you decide, no, I need to increase Utsarif again. So that is known as a deviation. So you are really going back on your commitment towards free trade. That's really what it is. In other words, you are regressing what you can call what a gain in getting towards market access. But as I said, the challenge is that a number of countries in the region are not industrialized. So pushing market access was really seen as pushing South African industry at the expense of developing industry in the other countries. Yeah. One other challenge, maybe the last one that we mentioned, is that a number of countries in the region belong to more than one regional economic community. So what we have in the sub-region, we have SADC, in East Africa, we have the East African community, in the North, we have COMEX, and you find that there are countries that belong to more than one of those. And the challenge with that is that it is difficult to then, for a particular regional economic community, take a particular stand because there are member states that belong to another one, which is for different benefits or advantages, and therefore one to take a different position when it comes to particular issues. So that has been quite a big challenge. Then, so that was as a free trade area, and hopefully eventually a customs union. Maybe I should come into the issue of customs union. You see, the challenge with the customs union, what we have right now in South Africa is the South African customs union, which involves what are known as BLS and states, Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, Swaziland, and South Africa. Now, basically when you have a customs union, what you're saying is anything that is imported into that region, the revenue goes into one city, one market. Mm-hmm. And that revenue at some point is then distributed and I think proportionally according to what is perceived to be the input of each country. Now, as it stands, I think we have what I can call challenges in terms of the revenue sharing formula, because there is a specific formula. We have tried, I think, on a number of times that there was a review, but that review, one of those major reviews was eventually rejected by the other member states. But there have been disagreements made in terms of what the revenue sharing formula must look like. And there have been attempts to review it, but those have not been successful. Now, talking about moving SADC now as the 14 countries from a free trade area to a customs union would also pose quite a number of difficulties. Even though we agreed to doing it in a planned timeline, but we would clearly need to have an animal that is different from the customs union that we have today. So that is an important what you now. Coming to the tripartite free trade area. The tripartite free trade area would comprise the COMESA, the East African community, and SADC. As I said, you've got a number of countries that already have a cross membership, over the membership. Now, in SADC, we have not yet fully reached the free trade area, but we have agreed to start negotiating a free trade area between the three trade groups, between the three legs. So that is the tripartite free trade area, COMESA, East African Community, and SADC. And there are figures there that look impressive, that into the block of 26 countries is slide number 7, combined population of 530 million, GDP of 1 trillion. Now, I always when we look at specifically those statistics, and specifically one, which is that we are a combined population of 530 million people in the GDP of 1 trillion. And the reason why I say this is because a country like Australia has a population of 22 million and they have a GDP of 1 trillion. So it actually should be a bit worrying that we need to be 530 million in order to have a GDP of 1 trillion. There are a number of countries, I think Indonesia and others, which have a much smaller population than 30 million, but their economies are 1 trillion. So it does tell us that, in actual fact, we have had a lot of work to do, and should not just be proud that we are in this, we are 530 and we are 1 trillion. Clearly, what we want to do is to improve inter-regional trade, promote cross-border regional infrastructure projects, and all sorts of impediments to trade between countries. So that talks a lot to infrastructure, because one of the biggest challenges that we have on the continent, continentally we have what is known as BIAT, boosting intra-African trade. And one of the biggest challenges to boosting intra-African trade is precisely the lack of interconnected infrastructure. So many times, for you to trade with a country that is 2 or 3 borders away, you actually have to start in Europe before you come to Africa. And that is a very, very big challenge for the continent as a whole. And it's really one of the issues that we have to address, which is why Ambassador Akmal's presentation on P9 PD is going to talk to some of these challenges. So, going to slide number 8, the TSPA, obviously what we want to achieve is this trade, uninhibited, unhindered trade between our countries, but it's also going to involve so many other things, as in the free movement of business, persons, and all of those. It's going to have many other additional dimensions that really are aimed at us getting to work with each other, for each other, and therefore eventually managing to promote the continent. The TSPA, slide number 9, that was launched here in Johannesburg. South Africa did not completely sign up to it. I mean, we actually had hosted a summit before, but it's really that we there are issues that are outstanding, and we basically have said that we will not sign on to it until those outstanding issues are resolved. Among them, rules of origin, trade remedies, dispute settlement, etc. The last line there talks to a separate project, which is the Continental Free Trade Area, the CFTA. The CFTA is not the type of diagonal, it is the whole continent. And basically, it encompasses the TFTA countries, plus the West and the North Free Trade Area. Now, the CFTA is something that we are trying to at the level of the African Union. And we have committed ourselves to launching it in 2017, that is next year. I have to caution that a number of countries see 2017 as being very optimistic, because the Continental Free Trade Area, its consolidation really has to be based on the regional GFTA. And the regional, like our own, FTA in Saraka is not yet full-blown free trade area. It's still got derogations and all of those things. The TFTA, which is also supposed to be a building block of the Continental FTA, is not yet completely done. But what we had, the 2017 figure was a milestone that we are hoping, you had a milestone in order to be able to measure yourself, to measure progress, and be able to look at what the difficulties are. So, if we have it as a milestone that we should have, maybe if I can just go very, very quickly, the TFTA countries, if I recall well, the leaders of the TFTA countries have said that we need to begin what are known as text-based negotiations, I think it is during this year, which means that we need to stop theorizing and actually have text and start negotiating on text. In other words, I agree with paragraph 1 but not with paragraph 2. And then we see how do we modify paragraph 2 and what do we need to change and what we agree on. So they have said we need to begin text-based negotiations. And then about saying the Continental Free Trade Area, we have a commitment for 2017. I think slide number 10 basically is issues that we have talked to, all of the things that we want to achieve. Slide number 11, maybe talk to the general state of the continent. If we say that most economies remain weak, you know, clearly, South Africa today is known as the second largest economy after Nigeria. But we have a GDP of about 350 billion. I'm not sure if it's a bit more than that. The second largest economy in South Africa is Angola with 100 billion. But most of the economies in the sub-region, and talking particularly about our sub-region, but including East Africa, actually fairly small. The economy like Botswana is 18 billion US. That is a small economy. Economies like Lesotho are smaller. So the first point which talks to that most economies remain, which is actually one of the biggest challenges that we face. We have historical divisions, not only Anglophone and Francophone, but others as well. And of course, something that follows from having a weak economy is that you have things like lack of institutional capacity and so on. We've spoken about overlapping membership. That is a very big problem because it really puts, you lift the handbrake on negotiation. Because you have interest on this side and interest on this side, and then, you know, that actually hinders progress. Low levels of industrialization, insufficient infrastructure, and even levels of development, you know, very uneven levels of development, like very, very uneven. Even in an area like the East African community, you have an economy like Kenya, then you have an economy like Burundi, and the differences are really massive. Lack of market integration, popular participation. Slide number 12, perceived suspicion at South Africa's market dominance. I more or less spoke to that when I was talking about our own free trade area and the fact that you have the region because the region is not really subsidized and therefore low levels of intra-trade, inter-African trade, inter-regional trade, diversification. So basically what we know what we need to do. And it really starts engagement, continued engagement. I think broadly speaking, we all know that we want to get there. How to get there is really the challenge, and what things is one country willing to give up. Because the problem with processes like integration and so on, at some point, there is some element, however small, of the sovereignty that you have to give up. There's some element of your rights that you have to give up. That's inevitable. But it is something that you give up for the common good. So we just need to continue integrating, negotiating, talking with everybody else, using bilateral and multilateral fora, and so on. Share the last point, the last slide on the Grand Ingadem. I'm not going to talk too much to this because we have a colleague in the department who participated directly in the process that led up to the signature of the treaty. And I think it would really do justice to this project and to your understanding of this project if at some point you will invite to come and actually present to you both process and where we are and the actual benefits and expectations that we have out of presenting them. We really just have some, maybe I can call them a few principles and a few issues around the process here that explain this. Maybe I should start by saying, we as a country, we generate, I think it is 38,000 megawatts of power. And our total peak consumption is about 43,000 megawatts. The Grand Ingadem on its own has a projected capacity of more than 40,000 megawatts. In other words, if we were to get the Grand Ingadem going, it would generate almost as much electricity as the whole of South Africa is consuming today. So that is a massive amount of electricity. It is a project that has been talked about for a very long time. At some point in my life, I was ambassador to Italy, and there were a few things that got Italians more excited than talking about the possibility of Grand Ingadem. And the reason for that was that they have always seen Grand Ingadem as one of those projects that could actually supply part of the south of Europe with electricity. Now, again, just about 38,000 megawatts. We generate much more electricity than Italy generates. The reason for that is because Italy buys most of its power from neighboring France and from neighboring Switzerland, from the UK power station. So for them, the possibility of having additional sources of power has always been an exciting one. The Grand Dilemma, if constructed, would be the largest hydroelectric dam in the world. The only other dam that compares in size is the Three Gorges Dam in China. It's the only other one. There is no other hydro dam that is as big as this. Now, just going through some of the points here, we signed the MOU in 2011 to establish this treaty on the Grand Inga Dam. And as it says, they entered into force in 2015. The aim is to develop about 39,000 megawatts. There's a beautiful distinction about that figure. Like I said, it's probably more than 40,000. There's an assumption that can actually do a little bit more than that. Again, this is not going to be one single wall, but it will be a project that will be built in phases. And then, according to the treaty, then South Africa would have the possibility of buying some of that power. Initially committed to buying 2,000 megawatts from phase one. I think the other important point is the fourth bullet there, that we have within the treaty a sort of secured the right of South African, but also Southern African companies of getting an important level of participation in the construction and other causes. Now that is really important then. And I think this is part of why I think that Mr. Makaya should actually come and make a presentation on this specific issue, because it has the potential, there has an important economic potential for companies in the South region. And this is going to be to cover all aspects of the construction, procurement and so on. But clearly, given the size of the project, there probably isn't any single company in the South region that has the capacity to do a lot of what has to be done. So obviously, you have a lot of joint venture. But again, it is important because it secures the right of a number of companies in the South region to participation in the processes. A lot of this, of course, will rest on the DRC government. They are, at the end of the day, the ultimate owners of the project. And then again, the possibility of that electricity being distributed primarily in the sub-region. So there are processes that are underway. I can't quite talk to those. And on our side, it is the Department of Energy that is the lead department. Our head is there, Chair, but again, that to say that the Grand Inga Dam, if implemented, would probably be the biggest project to happen on the continent in many, many, many years. And the potential economic impact of it is massive, because the level of electrification that it can bring to the continent and maybe even to South Europe would have a very big impact on the continent. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, that's bad. Ambassador Chopin,
help them sort of some sort of my authority. I'm not on the show, so thank you very much for your presentation. I really have asked myself many questions, most of which do not belong to you. Around both issues, but I want to allow members to engage this. But I'm just saying the question I was thinking about belongs to the leadership of the African continent. Let's welcome Honorable Lekota and Honorable Mukhalapa, Honorable Bergman. Who else joins us later? And I want to defer to the members to make a comment. Tea is served outside. It just came after we started. Water has been distributed. The officials and the members are free to grab something and come back. Someone did say earlier on, we're hungry. Honorable Muru, let me just note you. Honorable Khatebe, Honorable Pumblana, Honorable Rabut, was your hand up?
Yes.
Maya. Okari Kita Makari. Latem Pumblana Kira Lamona. Honorable Kota, are you there? Honorable Mukhala, come on, let's come Mukhala. Daman, are you there? Thank you very much. I'll come back to Hadel because I'm now in the cover. Only advantage your age. Just for one. Strengthen one area
and say, okay, you, so one country, one organization, one union. I'm not saying that you could contract to them. One country, one union. What are the problems in that? Because you have, and you strengthen that and strengthen that one. And so, as a big organization can easily integrate with another organization. You jump and want to have a continental system. And the third question is, what are the problems raised by the Franco, what do you call it?
Francophone.
So, and Nokia phone and other phones. That are more attached to, as that Baba, attached to the to France. They are more inclined to go to France and to go to African to get attached to the continent. One was saying that it's an accident of nature that I'm black, actually, and a French man. That's one that the FBI was saying before he became it was Zaire. So I'm trying to find that the indoctrination in the Francophone is assimilation. Actually, saying that these are the upright. How do you overcome that? Those are a few questions. You didn't say all that. You must not hear everything. I listen to the radio.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbungana, and of course, pertinent to your request to leave as you are now allowed. Well, back to the raw, Honorable Kajere.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I'm looking on the road to the regional integration. A person will ask a question, who advises the heads of state when making this target? Because there's nothing else better than putting a target in Shadow and you are not going to be able to address it. Take an example here. When you think about the monetary union by 2016 in the past, when the economies of SADC are so widely different, how is that thing going to be achieved? So the issue, how was this advice put on the plate? Because it's not possible. You cannot think aloud in South Africa. The bank that they are going to be on the single monetary union, it's going to be possible. Because the other one is just to be a province of the other. I think it's not going to happen. So I think all that scholar regards here are particular presentations about that, about the type of support here. And then number two, if it is so difficult to deal with the research area, it's so difficult. What about the customs union? As the ambassador Shope said, when coming to the issue of the customs union here, we thought that the staff was going to be the union customs union. But there are actions within the MDLF, the cattle million itself. So when you take in that corruption, you put Angola, you put Zimbabwe, you put it in the Soto. So these are not the same. They are not the same. So there is no way. So I think that is it not at the high time that we put it realistically? For example, the EU. How many years it took the EU to be in? 200 years. And then even after that 100 years, it is still wobbling. It is wobbling. One comes from one country, the whole system is shaken. So are we going to be able to attain that? That's the open question. And then apart from SADC being more integrated, when you look at the RDs, SADC is actually more integrated than the other. So you put all the other three together, it means that you are keeping the confidence now instead of the. Is it not the high time that we focus on what we can be able to choose and deal with that? I can make an example. The standard click on trade and services, protocol on trade and services, is not yet implemented. But you find that we are going to need, in order for to get the electricity from the internet, go to Guano or Lambda, whatever it might be, So if our companies are not going to get the medical treatment from those countries, they are going to be troubled. Yeah. What if they say, if you get a new president, he starts saying, no, this is not going to buy. But, you know, it's not covered like that. It means that we're exposing ourselves to a lot of risk as we're moving forward. But apart from that, on the issue, I think that we agree with the issue of those pillars which are raising the regionalization, industrialization, and infrastructure development. I think it's good that they can be traced that. Yeah. But unless their economies are raised, there will be no integration. In actual, there will be adoption. So I think that aspect is good. We very appreciate that South Africa is inviting that. Because if we don't have regional leadership, we're going to be in trouble. Italy is a good example of what we're making. Italy are not producing anything, just buying from the neighboring country. So even that the same commodities which they get from the other countries without being produced. So unless even here in South Africa, we know very well that we don't have water, but suddenly can put a lot of water. So it means that everything has great, you know, that certain economical endowments which are coming from the other countries, instead of us exporting the goods towards those countries, instead we must import from them. Then we have a strong infrastructure within the country. But the last one here is the issue of things that this one is frustrating, yeah, to be honest, because I think this thing has been a partner for more than 100 years. For more than 100 years. And then it shows that it can be a game changer in Africa. It can come to the existence of Africa and around the rest of them. But what I'm worried is that we requested the department to make a presentation. We expected a full-blown presentation around this. I'm wondering why the session was supposed to present not being made. Because really, I think that South Africa has made commitments towards that. And then I know that it has not even fulfilled those commitments. That's what's worrying. It has not fulfilled on the M3. Yeah. Has it paid what it was supposed to be paid? Whatever it might be. Because really, if this project, which is so big, which can be a game changer for Africa, can be delayed for so many years. Even now, it is still being delayed. So really, I think we must get that presentation, a complete presentation, as quickly as possible. Because this one is also a critical of how the continent can be integrated by trade. Therefore, you produce it that thing, you can supply it up to Nigeria electricity, you can supply it up to North Africa. So you can find that you can have a common cause whereby one country is able to export a commodity throughout the entire continent. So on that regard, because without trade here, the possibility of integration is going to be limited. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Rakuti.
Thank you, Ambassador. Okay. Yeah. You know, we have faced so many challenges. I think this thing is full of challenges. From 2008, there is not really kind of integration. But however, you said that there is a hope in 2017. So actually, what made you to say that 2017 will be able to, to alleviate this kind of challenges? And on the issue we are against in Gabon, because the unemployment, the people are really hopeless. So I think this is the only hope they grant in Gabon. Is their hope, because the source of water is the source of life. In any case, have you made some projections that, you know, how many jobs is it going to create for South Africa, subject region and life? I'm also asking myself, let me pause. But those are the questions that I wanted to ask.
Thank you, Honorable Rapport, Honorable Ayela.
And thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, Ambassador, for the presentation. Chair, my thing is that the interest of the colonial masters, especially during the Berlin Conference, was to see a divided Africa. So, if
Africa moves towards unity, that will always be right. So I wanted to check what could be the role of the Western power in ensuring that what we need to see happening doesn't happen. Are they assisting or are they actually doing something else? The other issue, Chair, is the question of time. Time is not enough.
Okay.
Because we have plans which are very optimistic, but the issue of implementation is the problem. And the more delay is the more when actually will be progressing. And I think in the interest of time, there are issues that need to be addressed before we get to. Look, if we have a problem in the tripartite free trade treaty, how then do we leapfrog towards a continental free trade area? Because the human problems in the smaller areas will actually become even bigger if we attempt to establish a bigger form. So my take is that maybe we need to address this problem that we have identified even before we can go further. Yeah, Chair, let me pause for now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chauvin.
Thank you, Chair. Ambassador, I think it would be progressive if you can just change your name to Stoke. Thank you very much for the presentation. I concur with other colleagues who have said it's not impressive about Africa not moving forward. As you correctly mentioned in your presentation, that everyone wants to travel, but is the destination that we don't know how to reach there. And you correctly put it correctly to say there is no political will, and I concur with you. I think here it's high time maybe to get some presentation from the AU as well. Because I listened to Comrade Dumpeji when Comrade Kofana Nkuruma took over. I listened to him very carefully because always excited. You know when a South African lady is playing some role somewhere else, and we all get excited. But I listened to Comrade Dumpeji to say, it's not going to be easy for comrades in Mozambique because of those things that you were mentioning, Frank,
lose of phone, and then the phone.
Yes, because there is a problem, there is division between those people from France and English-speaking people. There's huge division there. I remember last time when I went to U.S., not to this committee because the committee has not set up anywhere. But it was a trip through the pickup office.
My apologies.
And the chairman's phone. Because we are doing an oversight in this committee, but we have never done any oversight anywhere in the world. So you must know today. Through the pickup office, there was a trip to U.S. attending IPV, if I'm not mistaken. On our arrival there, Mr. Mamamud, Ambassador Mamamud, when he briefed us, South Africans, he told you about those divisions. But here is not divided because those countries, they don't want South Africa at all. So they don't, on the views of the UN Security Council and so on. You know that we are rotating.
Which countries?
No, he mentioned the countries, but my point is to say those divisions are always there. We are not united.
Africa.
Yes.
Okay.
As Africa, we are not united, and it affects us big time.
Yeah.
When it comes to the issue of integration, as the document speaks for itself on page 4, that you are not moving, you are 15%, it's much worried because we like to see this integration with other African countries to move in a steady way. But at least what you mentioned, Ambassador, the issue of infrastructure, that is still a challenge. That's why I'm suggesting that maybe at some point you have to have a meeting with the AU to get a progressive report from them. Kanti, when are these African leadership want to address these things of infrastructure and so forth? Because it seems that we are not moving as Africa. And then the honorable member then wanted to get also the influence of West. Because we can't run away from the fact that West has got some major role to play as well in Africa. We can be happy that in other negotiations, in the document, it's mentioned that South Africa is leading, but the fact of the matter is that as an African continent, we are not moving. We are not implementing anything in terms of implementation of whatever project we are implementing, but it does not have any impact. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mohalapa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think you're quite right. The comments and the questions that we make would have to go to the political leadership because of, I think, the situation here is now gone beyond the bureaucrats. It's now in the hands of the political leadership of the region. And we always talk about, you know, Western influence and external influence, but forget that we are our own worst enemies. Ourselves internally. I always, and you know, Chair, because we serve in the SADC parliamentary forum together, and you know, it's always surprising how we try to outsmart each other in terms of our colonial languages. You know, it's a 14-nation bloc using three official languages. You should go to those forums, and it's like we are not talking to each other. Someone's talking English semantic, someone in Lusophone semantic, someone in Francophone semantic. Then when we must come with a resolution, it must go through all those three semantical languages in outsmarting. This doesn't mean this in French, this doesn't mean this in English, this doesn't mean this in Portuguese. So we are our own worst enemies. And you spend more time about outsmarting each other in terms of those languages rather than focusing on the job at hand. And this is what happens in those forums. And I think Ambassador knows that because of even with bureaucrats, that's what they get. You know, a DG from Angola would speak in Portuguese, you know, then it will be from Mozambique, you know, it will be from DRC in French, and then it will be us here in the South trying to speak, you know, Oxford English. So this is what it's all about, you know, in this multilateral forum. But I think one thing that is also a challenge is a trust deficit amongst, and I don't know how I'm going to proceed if we've got no trust amongst us. And spoke quite directly about the issue of market dominance, because it looks as if South Africa doesn't get rid of this perception of being a big brother, and sometimes the attitude that we take perpetuates that perception to be a reality. Now, if we argue that, if we have to take a common currency, then we are devaluing our rent. We're taking the same stances that British is taking, that Britain is taking. That is no use for them to be in the 26-nation bloc of the EU. If you want integration, there are sacrifices you must make. It's a fact of life. So if we are saying that, no, we cannot have a common currency, let me give you this classical example, and the chair knows about it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we are in the side of PF, there was a debate on which currency do we use. Now, the SADC PF headquarters are in Namibia. It's logical to use the Namibian dollar, which is equivalent to a rand. But let me tell you who opposed that, the Zimbabweans. They say, no, we must use the American dollars. They don't even want to use the South African rand. They say, no, the South African rand is unstable. We can't use that. Now, we're talking of integration, but we cannot even just agree on which currency to use. The permutations are about us using the British pound or using the American dollar. But yet, when we sing in the podium, we say they must keep their money and everything else. But when we have to take a strategic position that strengthens our region, then we relax. Because of it didn't make sense. And I argued to them, I said, but your remittances are more in rand than in dollars. Why do you want to use the dollar? You know? There's no answer. So we're talking in tongues. We're talking, you know, it's like we are schizophrenic. We're saying the other things and we are doing the things differently. If we have to integrate, we must have a common currency that we can agree on. Now, if you've got the Zimbabwe attitude that says, no, the dollar is much better, If you've got an African attitude that says, no, my rent will just fall and collapse, where are we going to go in that money? You know, it can be equivalent to the Malawian dollar. And then you've got the Botswana. The Botswana will say, no, our kula is much more heavier than your rent. Why should we devalue ourselves? The Namibians will come and say, yeah, but the Namibian dollar is equivalent to the rent. You know, those are permutations that you discuss in the forums. And, you know, someone asked the question, who advises our heads of state? Well, the jury is still out there. Don't know who does that. But the other challenge in terms of integration is the issue of domestication of protocols. You know, there are a lot of protocols that have been agreed upon, heads of state, from heads of state level to even us in parliamentary forums, but they are not domesticated when they go back home. And we can talk of all of the resolutions and everything, but if they don't go through the formal legal indigenous laws of those countries, then you cannot move on that. So domestication of protocols and agreements that we have in this forum are still a big challenge. And I think the Ingadem, definitely. When we had our SADC PF in Durban last year, I posed this question. I said, we are all here, DRC here. What is the status in the Ingadem? Why can't we use the Ingadem? No, and there was consensus. Yes, yes, we must make the Ingadem project move on. But it can only be us from a legislative point of view. Once it gets to executive, things get stuck. You know, one speaker from one country came to me, you know, and said, look, I mean, this is the challenge. We can agree here as legislators, but remember, when we go back, we've got the executive to face. And the executive has got their own way of doing things and thinking. And things fall apart in the cracks in those ways. So it's still an elephant in the room, the Ingadem, and we've got energy crisis and challenges. And here we've got the safest energy and the cheapest energy that we can use with Ingadem. And it goes again to trust deficit because of people saying, yeah, but what if there's another president who comes and say, you know, let me put on the plug here. I mean, that is why you've got protocols and contracts and agreements. It doesn't go that way, you know. So this is the challenge. And we always talk of infrastructure. We've got the SADC regional infrastructure program. It's not coming on board. It's a chicken and egg. How do we do integration and trade before we have infrastructure? You know? I agree with the review of SACU, you know? But, you know, SACU, we all know, it's just there to sustain Swaziland. It's just there to sustain the country. Without SACU, there's no those countries. They don't exist. So how can they want to, you know, not have the status quo remain? Because of part of their GDP is based on SACU, on the revenue from SACU. That is why you've got, you know, these issues of derogation. Because of it comes from there, you know. That is why the EFAS, Honorable Hadebe, as you know, was a challenge. Because of it's easy to infiltrate. You go to individual countries and say, this is what you need. You don't need South Africa to do that. So we are our own Western Indians. We're singing not from the same song sheet, but we're all making the same noise. And that is the challenge. And I think, yes, definitely. These are things that, and it's a nice question to the president next week, Thursday, which is about economic diplomacy in the African continent. I think this presentation has come at the right time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Batman. I didn't say you. You want to come before Batman?
Yeah. I'm just a junior.
Oh, okay. Honorable Kalyan.
Oh, I thought you noticed my hand.
No, I didn't see you.
Thank you. Yes, the presentation is quite fascinating, and I think a lot of what I wanted to ask about the Ingadem has been covered. I need a little bit of clarity on the customs union. Now, where is this body placed, and who coordinates it? You spoke about the proportional distribution of the monies to the different countries. How did you arrive at that? I didn't get quite the detail. Now, the objective of the tripartite FTA to achieve duty-free and quota-free treatment on all products, I think was noble in the intention. But I'd like to know, what is your view on the impact on the textile industry, which has caused a lot of job losses? Do you think it's got anything to do with this trucking trade agreement? Now, South Africa has not signed, but we didn't get the detail of why. You say pending finalization of outstanding issues, but it's in limbo. I don't understand why. Rules of religion, trade remedies, dispute settlement. Now, we don't know the exact detail. We just know because of these issues. To me, it's all agreement if one has to look at it. And if it's only South Africa that has not signed, you know, and it launched in 2015, so how long are we waiting to finalize this? Do we have a time frame by which it can all be ironed out and that we are happy? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. No, I sometimes think that's exactly what the ANC accused the DA of in terms of opposition, you know, that they're arrogant, that they're whining, that they always put a spanner in the works. I sometimes think that that's how the world sometimes perceives South Africa's involvement in many of the agreements in it. Now, in the South Park free trade area, I'm interested to know out of 25 countries, just how much, out of the 26 countries, just how much weight we really pick in terms of our GDP compared to theirs, our exports and imports as a country, and who the biggest players really are. If you pierce through the three regions, who the big players really are in terms of the agreement. For us, this is one of the opportunities for us to again try and find common ground where, you know, it's easy to say that we're disputing this and the reasons for our dispute, but 2017 comes very quickly. You know, before we know it, in terms of our resistance, we're probably about 4 or 5 meetings away, or maybe 5 to 8 meetings away from the deadline. And for me, it's interesting to note who are the big players and how can we get around the situation from a more practical perspective. I think it's easier to negotiate country to country than region to region. So obviously the strategy is to go through the region and then let the region negotiate. But sometimes you might find that if we look at the big players and we've got relationships on those, we could possibly settle a lot silently and as I say, take away from that perception as Honourable Clark has very often, not often her and I would agree in a platform, but here we do agree that the perception is terrible, you know, and this is one I'm trying to correct.
Are you done?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yon, come in.
Just a comment. I think we've been very hard, but I just wanted to say that with our foreign policy, you know, if we look at our foreign policy, which is so diplomatic, which is soft, which is old, which is, I think, really, I think we must also be mindful of the aspect of our foreign policy, which really trying to address, you know, those kind of challenges that we are facing. I think all of us have been very, very, very hard as South African. I'm speaking as a South African here, and with our foreign policy in place. I thank you.
A student of history, if the publicity secretary of the UDF has not spoken, I feel something is missing.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Okay.
Don't you want to say something?
There are real problems, of course, that we are contending with. But let me hear that there are various responsibilities to some of the Chinese continents and
Okay. Ambassador, just one or two comments from me. On the Grand Inga Dam, I did not
jail whether when it was conceptualized, which countries were involved, and when they then conceptualized it, looked at the opportunities, the challenges, the financing, and the long-term vision about its establishment, how then they committed to that. I think that when you were talking about the trade area, there's a challenge of political will. And I was wondering whether, because there are always elections in SADC in Africa from time to time, and something like that, whether this project is not impacted upon by that. But the critical question I want to ask is financing. Did they think the grant in Aden will be financed by the World Bank or the IMF, or they want to think about the coming National Development and the New Development Bank, also known as the BRICS Bank? But that bank does not have the money that you would need for the project license, because it is new and therefore its financial bid would be a bit lower. The second issue is around security. The very fact that the DRC itself is not stable, and because now this big dam, the Grand Inga, will be its own gold, it does mean that the rebels in the DRC will target the Grand Inga dam. So you need to a permanent garrison, kind of, in the Grand, maybe a multinational one. We got in the red. Because this is a goal for all of us. But as it moves from DRC, it goes to Zambia, there are mountains and rivers to cross, particular infrastructure does not go to that, and then from there to Zimbabwe, from Zimbabwe to South Africa. So, things like that. And whether the kind of skills that are needed for the Grand Inga Dam have been quantified. But I just thought I must make a suggestion here if members agree. I think I want to recommend that we take another discussion on this matter. We invite the department, you make the presentation on the tripartite trade area together with the Inga Dam, with the person of Manas logic is a foot on this matter. And then we also bring in issues that are raised in the African Agenda 2063 about skills and all that. But by 2063, we must have done this thing. But we must be together with the Department of Energy, and then perhaps the minister can come there, so that some of these machines, we can fire them to them. If we find time, and the other chair agrees, we can reschool ourselves on this. Because if you look at the state of the national address of the president, there's a lot that he said about economic development. You can see the language is more to leaning towards that. In 2015 and in 2016, and the budget speech also does say we've got to get the economy right. It must just grow for everything to be all right. So, perhaps if we can educate ourselves around that, I'll see if I can, I'll be able to agree on my job. Masnga Bumelash, who will then call you. On the free trade area, the weaknesses or challenges are, I've here spelled out on page 11 up to 12. Now, some of these things cannot be answered by you, so I don't know where I should take them to. I just want to take half of what Mukalama was saying, that we have a problem of divisions within the African continent, within the continent, that lead to our inability to work together towards a common vision. And now it's not a matter that not a question that I can file to you. Maybe put differently. A free Africa, if you take Ghana, 1957, it should be 6 years now. 6 years, and then there were a number of countries in the 1960s that got free. Quite a number. I think it should be more than 10, 15 cities in 1968, up to Swaziland and in 1968. So those countries are around 50 something years free. We are the only one in South Africa, which is fairly young, very queer. Now, if we leave the sins of the white and the sins of everyone else, and we say, but what have we been doing to our people as a leadership? You see, because the sins of the West have not been removed completely from the physical landscape of the continent. What they decided in Berlin, in Africa, all of those things, it's the same as the scars, the physical scars inflicted by apartheid. But you don't, as a leadership, you don't keep on crying all the time and not correct things. So that is the challenge I have about ourselves in the continent. In addition to this, for instance, here, these witnesses here, there are witnesses that were identified by President Mbe. I think he was commissioned by the continent, this illicit financial flows. Was it the UN? Was it the AU? And I see that there is a page today in the Business Day that talks about things like that. Kangani, Business Day of today. But I just couldn't read it. That's for your point. So, you see that there is a problem of repatriating money and repatriating property. The other day, when we got a presentation, we had a discussion with the IGD, the Institute for Global Governance, Sanush and I, who said the reason why India is developing at the pace that it is, many Indians, wherever they are in the world, are actually beginning to invest at home. If we were to use that example, just wondering whether the leadership of the continent should not be talking to the African diaspora in France, in Britain, in the USA. They are probably well off. You remember the issue of the brain. They went to universities there. They got married. They got better jobs. But they can invest in Niger. They can invest in Nigeria, in South Africa, wherever they come from. They can help their banks and their whole economies while they are actually American citizens. Now, these are questions that I would be very afraid to say you must answer them. But we also have said, as the African leadership, where there is no industrial base, to gravitate towards the free trade area, one of the things is that we must deal with the issue here, industrialization within each REC, you see, within each region. We don't have a study that shows that COMESA now, in terms of industrialization, it must be the following type of industry, and it is at the percentage. And EAC is building the following, it is at its pace. And standard, it is at its pace. And therefore, by 2070, you would be at this percentage. Learning, of course, from the European Union. Because we almost at that these targets, you must get someone who puts these targets and tells you how you must arrive there, what monies, what skills, and what other things image. That's why it's discussing with ENA in Gabon is a fool. The issue of poor infrastructure, not only do we have poor infrastructure, particularly the road infrastructure, the air transport, the rail transport, and the road transport were made by the colonial powers to serve their own capitals. The air transport from here to France, from here to London, from here to Germany, from here to... But if they were there, I would have done the same thing. Because I would have been English, I would have been French. Now, we know that there is talent, but we must then build a tunnel between Niger and Somalia, a dam between that and that, and a road between that and that, and a harbor between that and that. So that, because these would be enablers for trade to flourish among the African states. You see, that's another thing I was saying, that it's not a matter that we could be able to, you necessarily be able to answer. I think it's more for the leadership. So, just an answer assisted by Ambassador Asman and Advocate Machaba. Answer those that you can answer, and then let's move to the next topic. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chief. I'll try and be exhaustive, but I'll also try and be quick. I think maybe point number one. We always have part from the point of view that we live in the real world. And in the real world, there is national interest. Nothing comes above national interest. I think that is point number one. And the challenges that we have in relation to national interest and all of that, they go way beyond the competition between Anglophone and Francophone. They go way beyond that. They go way beyond the challenges that we have with Botswana have got nothing to do with what phone we speak in. Because the biggest language spoken in Botswana is actually spoken in South Africa as well. So I just want to say that we always have to part from the understanding that we live in the real world. And there's real politics out there. National interest is what comes first, and it is what drives countries to do or not to do. I think Honorable Mulwana talked about the issue of boundaries and all of that, which are a challenge to us, and here they divide communities, you know, Northwest people to Botswana, Mozambique, and so on. But again, it was an AU decision that we have to respect colonial borders. That's a decision that the AU took, because I think that not to respect colonial borders would actually have caused problems onto the continent, because it would have meant reconfiguring most countries of the continent, and I think that was not doable. How long will it take us to internalize that? I think that's an open question. Maybe even before I go to that, I should say that probably we would advise that when you have a subsequent presentation on the visa integration and the TFJ and so on, I think we should invite the DTI, because they are a key player in trading industry. Yes, because a lot of it, what you negotiate in your free trade areas basically has to do with trade. So they are a key player in that. To an extent, you could say they are a lead department on the issue of regional integration. And also, when we next present on INGA, I think we should have the Department of Energy. But I wanted to place on the record the apology of Mr. Makaya. Mr. Makaya is on state visit supporting the president in Nigeria. And that is why I am presenting this on his behalf. This is not even my area of this is not what I deal with. I deal with the AU and Nigeria. SADC and Africa in Makaya is what you call it. Really to apologize on his behalf on state visit to the president. Again, the issue of dual membership that the Honorable Mugnana asked about, it goes back to national interest. You know, when the English ask which side of your bank is partnered, that's really what it is about. And there are people who won't mind having it partnered on two sides. See if you can get a slice of bread on three sides. So it goes back to that. It goes back to national interest. The fact that, Mozambique, which is a Lusophone country, joined the Commonwealth. Why would Mozambique join the Commonwealth? it goes there to look for whatever benefits it can get. And that is what it's about. So you have to think from that point of view. Why do countries join more than one of these institutions? You are going to look for what benefit can I get from them, which one can I get from there. And if I am there, what can I use to fight to stop that specific change that they want me to make? I think it is really about that. We have every year at least two summits of the African Union, at least one summit of the APDC. And a lot of what we should be discussing there has to do with how we further integrate the continent, how we further integrate the region. So there is a lot of contact at leadership level, trying to push precisely all of these agreements and so on to happen. And how do we better improve this? And I don't know, maybe at the African Union, maybe we actually take too many decisions and don't have proper oversight over how many of them are actually implemented through the letter. But what I'm saying is, we always have to pass from the point of view that we're in the real world, and national interest is what comes first. And people will always look at it that way. You look at what is convenient to you. What is not convenient to you, you try to, you put up the head for it. You try to make it stop. Who advises our heads of state? Well, the ministers and the ambassadors and colleagues like this gentleman is sitting here. But when we set out the target for achieving the Victoria area and the monetary union and capital union and all that, you know, that was before 2008. And I think there was an assumption or maybe a euphoria that we were finally managing to agree on something which will speed up integration and so on and so forth. But then you must remember, you know, lots of problems followed. All the crashes that happened in Zimbabwe, all those things, you know, the difficulties that they had. There are many things that happened at that time. But perhaps there was a euphoria which eventually knocked into the wall of national interest. And that is why subsequent to that, some countries have gone back on some of the commitments that they had made. It is national interest. It is what you see, what is good for your country, you see that, no, but hey, if this tariff that I have reduced, I've reduced it too much. I'm no longer deriving as much value as I was from before you wanted to raise it. So I'm just saying, again, we go back to that. To an extent, there is a narrative that says maybe we should no longer follow the linear model. In other words, free trade area to customs union to common market monetary union. Maybe we should look at doing something else. And maybe that's the reason why we also decided to start negotiating the CFTA. Because if we had waited for the standard free trade area to fully materialize, to come into bloom, by what year will that be? With the challenges that we face, that we still lack industrialization, that we still lack infrastructure. So there is another thing that says maybe we should not look strictly at the linear model and look at integration that doesn't necessarily go from A to B to C to D. I sometimes say that the EU's integration was selective. Ours is not. Ours is regional and continental. We have decided that all of the countries in the sub-region should join a particular regional economic community. In the EU, they were choosing. They started with Germany and France, and they were choosing. For you to join the European Union, to this day, you have to fulfill certain criteria. And if you don't fulfill that criteria, sorry, you are not a member. But with us, we have taken everybody from the richest to the poorest, and we are saying, let us fight to integrate. And that, it has difficulties. But if one way to ask the question, if you had waited for, say, the Sudan to reach certain criteria, let us say, similar to the EU's criteria, how long would that take? And when would the Sudan ever manage to integrate? I'm using this as an example, but it could be any other country. the 2017, it is not that I forecast that something will be better, but there is an AU target for 2017. In other words, the AU has said that we we should target 2017 to begin negotiating around the continental free trade area. We've launched it, but the actual negotiation. So it's not that the prediction that things will be better, but that we need to push ourselves to that target. And like I said, in terms of the TFCA, our head of state gave us a timeline to begin text-based negotiations, based on what you said. When you agree with paragraph A, not B, you are able to stretch out B and so on. And then again on creating, I think let us again wait for Mr. McKay's availability. We get him together with the Department of Energy. I will probably just make one remark. For the longest time, our ministers would travel to the DRC for a meeting that was agreed upon and their counterparts would be available. It happened more than once. So yes, the current intervention has delayed, but there are reasons why it's delayed. And if anybody gets why those who are supposed to be available are not available, I will just leave that there. The role of Western power. You know, let us take the AU. The African Union, it has a budget, it has its operational budget, it's divided into three. Its operational budget is day-to-day running. Its program budget, which is the thing that it wants to achieve, and so it has a peace and security budget. The contribution of member states to the program budget was about 3%. Which means that your, what I know, and your ICCs, your international cooperation partners, would say 97%. What is the result of that? The programs that are implemented are the ones that the ICCs are interested in. Those are certainly the ones that you are interested in. This brings me to something that is, I don't know, difficult maybe. And that is to say that summit decided that we should increase the amount that member states pay to African Union. This is something that we're going to present in cabinet, not that cabinet is not aware of it. But I just want to make this parenthesis to say a decision has been taken that we should increase the amount that we pay to our program budget from 3% to 75%. And peace and security from around 2% to 25%. Consequence of that, our contribution to the AU is going to increase last year from just under 13 million. Already this year, it's 20 million. And we are talking US. And that is not the end of it. That is not the end of it. Our contribution to the AU for it to run its program is going to increase significantly. So we are going to go from around 16 billion to over 64 million US. Now, that is the cost of our saying we have this program and this program are going to be implemented. If you don't do that, we are going to be marking time forever. Because the program that we want implemented will not be funded. So for us to say we are going to fund our programs and the programs must happen, there has to be a financial commitment. And part of the financial commitment is that one. And you're not preparing another question right now. Okay. Again, the issue of political will, I mean, it's not something that has to be overstated. Again, it goes back to national interest. Political will, you will, even the whole issue of the modification of treaties and whatever, of protocols, the political will. You can go there and agree to look good, but when you get back home, you don't implement because it doesn't suit you. So you have, I mean, those challenges that we have. I've just spoken about the increase in what is called the scale of assessment. We are in a process where we want to look for alternative sources of funding. There have been a lot of proposals. None of those proposals have actually been domesticated as yet. I think Advocate Mashabane would probably talk to us brilliantly about the issue of illicit financial flows, etc., etc. So the approach has been, and we want to increase integration, we want to boost inter-African trade, etc. Again, trap deficit, which was today by the whatever Makalaba, it's not an interest issue.
Mukalaba.
But I think the question we have to look at from a particular angle, which is how do we balance South Africa's leadership role, which we currently should take, with the whole issue of being seen to be one of the kids on the block, rather than the one with big muscles who can beat up anybody.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do? How do we? When we were at some summit, I don't remember the year in Mozambique, Sara summit. One of the issues that came up was that SADC had agreed to have a regional development fund. Nobody is talking about exactly where the money that the fund is going to, but everybody was talking about where must the fund be paid. Because there is an apparent, whether to call it an assumption, that if the fund is based here, all the money will come here. If it's based in Maputo, all the money will go to Maputo. But what I'm trying to say is that you will see there national interest playing itself out in a raw way, because a number of countries felt that they must hold the SADC Regional Development Fund without saying where the money will come from. But they felt that they must hold the fund. And to an extent, there was very express opinion that we need to water down the requirements to host the fund, because a lot of the countries did not have the requirements to host the fund. That is not an interest in raw. So I'm just saying, yes, we all want to integrate, but national interest will always come first. It will precede all of those niceties.
Okay, I want to try and summarize now. The customs union, who decided on how much must go where and all of that? The customs union has a secretariat. That secretariat is in Namibia. But the customs union is a member state driven organization. So the decisions that are taken and the agreements, when we signed off on the revenue sharing formula, if South Africa was represented at the table, the member state South Africa was, is one of those that are there. So, you know, who agreed on all that when whoever was representing us? I do not know who it is, but it's a process process because this is mainly about finances. But we were there as a member state. And then, of course, we have, like I said, we have the secretariat. And then,
through the chair, let him finish and then if you come back, because it is say more to the voice. Just finish.
Yeah, okay. I was going to go on to the issue of what is not under the target area. And I think that some of the reasons are listed there. But when you say, for example, and conflict resolution mechanism, because we have not completely agreed on what the procedure must be for us to get to resolve a particular conflict and who do you refer to. And remember, this is now a multi-regional economic community structure. So up until South Africa feels that it is satisfied with how the conflict and the resolution mechanism is explained in the agreement, that would be one of the sticking points. In terms of time frames, like I said, our leader has given us a particular deadline to begin set-based negotiations. And I don't know whether that's 2016 or 2017, but we are supposed to begin set-based negotiations where we again see we agree with paragraph A and not with paragraph B, and we agree with C and not with B, and so on, where all the countries will be having us. In terms of what relative weight does South Africa have in the CFTA? Well, South Africa is the second largest economy on the continent after Nigeria. So in terms of the CFTA, we are the biggest economy. The other key players would obviously be Egypt, Angola, and Kenya. Those would be the, like, maybe second tier large countries. And again, in terms of the CFTA, there have been a narrative, and I'm not saying we have agreed to the narrative, but there has been a narrative that says
maybe we should go with those who are prepared to go. Now, whether that will be agreed on in the end, whether that will work, I don't know. But yes, I think there is a general sense that we need to look for like-minded countries to push the negotiations and for us to be able to make progress. Lastly, Chair, on the issue of financing and development and all of that around Inga. Inga is not a new project. I think the Honorable Kadir said so earlier. But the treaty is failing you. And the treaty seeks to define a lot of things. The treaty does not say who must finance it. However, it is clear that in particularly in today's world, in very few countries, as individual countries would be able to finance it, and China would probably be one of them. You talked about the New Development Bank, where China is part of the New Development Bank, so they might want to be able to do this. I do not know.
Yeah.
But maybe lastly, the whole issue around the instability of the DRC, we might have to continue doing what we have been doing in the East, which is helping them to work against M23 and all the other forces that are there. And very, very lastly, we might, or we should be beginning a process in the department of trying to follow up on the outcomes of the Diaspora Summit for us to be able to work with the Diaspora correctly said, like the Indians have done very well. I don't know to what extent what level of success we expect in that, but we do want to start working on the outcome of the Diaspora Summit, some of which were the whole issue of mobilizing the brains and the financing of those that are out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You see, Minister, that I'm not clear that the Nigerian economy is the largest.
You know what she said?
Yeah, that she said, okay.
If it is the biggest, we are the largest. If they are the largest, we are the biggest.
Yeah. Advocate Salani or Ambassador Asman, do you want to add anything after the responses by Ambassador Chokre?
My apologies. No, that's sometimes, I guess the core of everything, if one summarizes it in one line, is it's national interest. That you can't prosecute any foreign policy without national interest. And for sometimes we wanted to create an impression that our foreign policy was not based on national interest. But after 20 years and going forward, the reality will be about how we go about prosecuting our foreign policy, taking into account the national interest. Because the reality is that with the 1 billion rand that we will have to contribute to keep the AU, which will all come from the public coffers, and all of us from our PACs will see that the biggest question would be, what is in it there for us? So the moment we answer that question, that's when we'll be dealing with real life, that the world is not flat and don't have morals in international relations and politics. But again, in the point about the target, if you look at Agenda 2063, which was accepted about 3 years ago now, And it was 50 years problem then, no longer 50 years now, it's about 46 to 47 years. So some of those targets that we had thought were far away are soon approaching. For example, 2020 we said we'll silence guns in the continent. 2020 is about 3.5 years to go now. The question is, will we have silenced the guns? You know, so. But of course, when you decide on the target, it looks like in the next few years you will be able to deal with some issues. But you have political realities. Take a look at our relationship between Nigeria. When President Obasanjo was the president, we had an excellent relationship. Now, if you did a forecast and a projection on the basis of that relationship, you would have thought we would have gone places now with Nigeria. But we had about 4 to 5 years. Of things not necessarily, working well between us and Nigeria. Now we're pressing a reset button. But you still can't say because it's President Buhari, then you can do a projection that in the next 10 years, South Africa and Nigeria are going to take the continent further because of the vulnerabilities in international politics that we cannot control. Thank you.
Okay. from the tone, I can feel that you are South African.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that Operation Sierra might have been missing your manager.
Yeah, not that is. I wonder who is in discussion with the TCI and the NH.
A person like me never actually ever read the illicit financial loan report at LMP. Because part of the financial and economic woes of Africa could be lying actually too much money from different states is shipped out. And therefore, there is little money in circulation in many of the states, and that is impact on the whole continent and its development and the other things. When if we come to that day, system and that discussion, the committee EDGI, the committee NH and ourselves, I mean this kind of equation on that one could do worse its mind together with the staff to make sure we see all of these things enhance the quality of our debates or our input even when we interact with people somewhere. With that, this matter is now closed and over to you for the Ambassador Atman on the PICI. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning again once honorable members. Chair, the presentation is before you. Before I go into the presentation, I just want to make a few preliminary remarks. And I think the first issue I want to clear up is the very pertinent question the Chair proposed on the difference between the Program for Infrastructure Development, PIDA, and PC. Now, PIDA is PIDA and PC are both programs under the NEPIN, and PIDA has a high rate of programs under it. There are more than 200 projects under PIDA, and the realization and it was realized that you can have all the programs. But if you do not have a champion or a mother and father for any of the programs, you're going to have open programs that will just be in academic books rather than practicalities. So, emerging from that, the idea was to form the Presidential Infrastructure Championing Initiatives. And that is to identify key projects, which I will enumerate and I will talk about more in my presentation, championed by presidents of certain countries that will enable the programs to go beyond the national interest and spread out regionally as well as continentally. So PC could rather be a substructure of PIDA with specific instructions, as will become evident for my presentation. The second issue, sir, that I thought I would want to just highlight is that when NEPIN was conceptualized in 2002, the geopolitical landscape of Africa was very different from what we see today. You will recall at that time there was a wave of Afro-pessimism. Africa was marginalized, but Africa had political will to get out of them and take responsibility for its own future. And it had a unique opportunity where the five initiators of NEPIN, South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Senegal, and Algeria, had leaderships which had a unique chemistry of being able to work with each other more effectively. So that was a political drive given. Fast forward to 2016, we see this economic optimism on the continent. Africa is not only marginalized, but it's now been viewed as a center for economic growth internationally, and its infrastructure is very much the center of that growth. However, the political circumstances of the five leading countries have changed. We know what has happened in Egypt, Nigeria, there was a change in government, Senegal as well. So the initial initiators have mostly been changed. And that's why I congratulate this committee for taking an interest in that bet, because the political will certainly sustain through institutional changes. The third issue, Chair, I want to talk about is this national interest. Much has been said in the previous discussion, and why very much of our interaction is very much on national interest. We cannot run away from geography. Our histories may be rewritten, our economies are very different, but our neighbors will always be our neighbors, and that is why it's important to take that into account. I think as if we go alone, we will probably go very fast to our destination. But if we go together with Africa, we will go very, very far. So our future is intrinsically linked with the continent and in particular with our region. Preliminary point I want to make here is that NEPED and the Department of and DERCO is not an implementing agency. We do not have shovels and the hardware to create roads and infrastructure. But what we do is we provide the intellectual and foresight for companies to countries to look beyond the national interest to see how these national interest projects can be used nationally and regionally. Thank you, Chair. Coming to my presentation now, the Presidential Infrastructure Championship Initiative was established by the NEPED Head of State in 2010. President Zuma chairs the initiative, and the overriding objective is to have priority projects which will spur on in different sectors, as will become evident later, for infrastructure development. It is, of course, an annual NEPED program, and within PC, South Africa's and Zuma's responsibility is the North-South road and rail development corridor. It's the North-South corridor, which I'll allude to later. PC is comprises 8 heads of state. It's South Africa, Algeria, Benin, Egypt, Nigeria, GRC, Rwanda, and Canada. And the sectors that are being highlighted are transport, energy, ICT, water sanitation, agriculture, construction, road, rail, and pipelines. Within each of these, although the presidents are the champions, the ministers under the various presidents are responsible for selecting the projects, of course, with intimate and regional consultation and execution. So the question we ask ourselves is why infrastructure? Why is PC important for infrastructure? And our realization is that while the economic outlook for Africa is very positive, the infrastructure situation in Africa is very, very bleak. And without infrastructure, of course, you cannot have economic development. And without economic development, you cannot really have peace and development and lift the social economic conditions of all our people. If you look at Africa, for instance, road access and the rate is only 34% compared to 50% of other parts of the developing world. Transport costs in Africa are 100% higher, and it takes much, much longer for goods and services to be exploited in the area. A study has shown, for instance, a container going to the DRC would take 6 to 8 days from China to Port of Durban, and from Durban to the DRC take another 3 to 4 weeks. And of course, that's not sustainable. It adds to cost it stunts our development. I think in short time I will not go on all of the questions we are on fourth. Let's go on to 5K. But let's hone in on to a few areas. In terms of the road networks, South Africa has only 204 kilometers of road per 1,000 square kilometers of land area, as compared to the rest of the world, which is 944 square kilometers. 27% of the road network is in poor condition, and 31% is in fair condition. And that explains the analysis that we spoke about earlier about container. Rail infrastructure is very, very promising in Africa, But however, the total network size approximately 70,000 kilometers, of which only 55,000 is currently being used. This talks to the neglect in of infrastructure that is prevalent on the continent. Next slide, please. Air transport is also a major concern. Often when you have to travel to some parts of Africa, you have to travel to out of the continent, either to Europe or to Dubai, to come back into Africa. Yeah, that is so many years after colonialism, it's still problematic for us. In terms of ports, although we have many ports in Africa, in 2005, 8.6 million containers were handled, of which 2 million were handled by Germany. Yeah, I just want to talk a bit about the process of how PC is being implemented or the processes. There is a National Infrastructuring Committee which was created in 2012, and it is co-chaired by the Director Generals of the Presidency, GERO, and GGI. There are also three steering committees which deals primarily with research and project preparation and project delivery of work stream. GERO serves as secretary for the above work, and we work very closely with GGI and GDSA. The Inter-Ministerial Committee for Infrastructure is also created and is chaired by Minister Garete. GERO works with this office for the technical task teams, and the ministers meet twice a year. Every year preceding the on the margins of the AU summit in January, the president hosts a PC breakfast where heads of state and key role players are invited. And it affords an opportunity for informal or discussions that is not hindered by a formal agenda, where frank discussions take place. That is just the process, the reporting mechanisms of PC. Next slide, please. Now, within the PC project, it has been decided that the key project, firstly, with Algeria. Algeria will be responsible for the missing link of the Trans-Sahara Highway optic fiber from Algeria to Nigeria via Niger. Nigeria would take responsibility for Nigeria-Algeria gas pipeline project. Senegal would be the Dakar and Djamena-Djibouti road rail. South Africa, the North-South corridor. And Congo, the Republic of Congo with the Kinshasa-Brazzaville bridge road rail project. Rwanda, because of the strength to internet, would be responsible and have been actually pretty successful in unblocking the political bottlenecks for ICT broadband and optic fiber. Egypt would take responsibility for construction of the navigational line between Lake Victoria and Mediterranean Sea. They have been pretty successful in that project, in that they've been able to mobilize local finances and done that in a record time. And a new addition to this was Kenya with the Lamu port in South Sudan, if you can transport for the project. Next slide, please. This is a snapshot of the project. Again. These are all the projects that are being championed by this year. So, as you can see from the snapshot, there are key countries that are economic nerves and they are taking responsibility for key developmental projects which go beyond national interest but will have a spin-off effect for regional and continental challenges. With regard to the North-South Corridor, South Africa champions the North-South Corridor incorporates projects for upgrade of infrastructure and remove bottlenecks, train flows, improve regularity and administrative constraints to transport and transit systems. The North-South Corridor covers East and Southern Africa and involves COMESA, EAC and SADC. And the North-South Corridor has also been identified as a PRPR plan and also features prominently in the SADC Infrastructure Development Master Plan. Next slide, please. fight for. I won't bore you with the details. North-South corridor broken up into bite-sized chunks of priority, and it lifts all the road projects or sub projects within the major project. That is also an indication of story or snapshot of a North-South project, and we have invested a lot in this because of its immediate benefits to us and our neighbors. Next slide. Here what we talk about is the active role in South Africa taking on the continental infrastructure development agents to translate into increased opportunities for South African private sector and infrastructure projects in the region. The private participation of infrastructure has potential to create multiple development and benefits, and it enhances the transfer of management skills, technical know-how, capital, as well as improve the provision of services to the poor and increase an operational efficiency of utilities. If you look at the thinking behind the North-South corridor, is that while the infrastructure would be created, there should be multiple spin-offs to the communities on this project. We would see schools coming up, hospitals coming up, skills being created, and so on. Also, we are hoping that the South Africa would play a central role in the development and enable our companies to compete with China, India, and Brazil. You must realize that many of these countries seem to get projects on the continent. One of the continents Africa is a continent that offers multiple opportunities in infrastructure development, and it's very important for South Africa to capitalize on this need and fulfill this need and stay off the competition from outside of the continent. Next slide, please. South Africa's role within this is firstly to address socio-economic deficits of the region and continent. I think that treaty and PC is one of those foreign policy initiatives which would have a direct impact on the life of our people. It will create jobs, it will create development, skills development, and so on. And South Africa's role is being spelled out in slide 17. In terms of time, I'm not going to speak on each one of them. It's available to members. Next slide. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Ahmad, for a good presentation. Once again, I want to invite comments from the member. Of course, there are any questions. If there are any, Honorable Maila. Maila, you and I share initial. Honorable Maila.
Yes.
Okay. Honorable Katebe. Honorable Kalia. Over to you. Maila.
What things?
Maila, MFA.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ambassador. Thank you for the work on the last month for the presentation. No, I think the approach here, the North-South corridor, as I look at it, I think it relates back to what Ambassador Sotter said, that maybe we need to shy away from a linear approach. I think it's a very good approach. I think when all this looks very promising. But what I wanted to check is, since 2010, are there indications of maybe when administration changed in various countries, whether the implementation of various projects suffers some consequences, or whether we still continue as agreed upon. I think, Chair, that's my point.
Honorable
Kota?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you.
Yes, Chair.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes,
Chair. Yes, Chair.
Earlier on, as well as this presentation, it seems to me that the amendable vulnerable for the sentiment renders the continent vulnerable is the first of all of the unevenness in the development of the various African countries. And frankly, one cannot escape the sense that former colonial powers continue to have the paramount influence in what choices are made by different African countries. And in fact, their participation in the project, which in the meetings of the OAU may be agreed upon. I've never forgotten that at some point when I was in defense, one of the African countries which was committed to what we wanted to do as a continent had a budget that was 75% donor money every year when they said to do a budget. And so if they took a decision that they wanted to participate in building this road or the dam or something, the owners or the donors would say, no, you can't use our money for that. Because that road or that tunnel will undermine our business interests. And so you can't do that if you do that, then we are taking our money. Now, I don't know at this stage, but maybe you do want to comment. Even this Ingadam thing. I think a lot of countries that genuinely would like to put in there, they now have to look over their shoulder that we owe so much money. And that's why they don't want us to do this thing. And they are going to withdraw their money. What the ambassador was talking about, the national interest, also has to do with considering whether you will jeopardize a budget contribution that donors have given you to build schools for your children in a country. Because you have to choose whether you will build those schools or go and build that road first. You know, this discussion that we do here, which was also assisted the relatives later. We need to drive them in some way to address how do we advise them how to address this issue. So that when the committee staff make recommendations or they report back to them, they need to be able to say that this is what the members say, this is what the legislature people are suggesting should be done. Mm-hmm. And I do that because your executives cannot generate all the ideas of how to do everything that can take us forward. So where do we get the money? Where do we say our executives must find the money to finance the project that we want done? And also how, I mean, our growth rate at the present time is very gloomy, very down and very gloomy. So we need our discussion to go in that direction. Ambassador, you might want to comment with your colleagues, you might want to comment on how many of the African countries continue to have huge debt with IMF and so on. And therefore, even we can't withdraw from those things to go in other, if you take this new development bank. To what extent are African countries able to free themselves from some of these bills? So that we begin to make now realistic comments and recommendations to the executive. We are the political resource of the executive, which must also get ideas from us here. Will we be able to really, what are the problems that are there along this corridor? How many countries are unable to contribute as they should when the road has to be built, when it's passing in their region? If it's passing in the region of the Great Lakes, how many countries are capable of bringing their hand because that's the material around there? How many are not? We need to look into that. I just want to make an observation for the moment.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kota. Very good observation indeed.
Honorable Chairperson, I think that this report is good then, because it gives us an eagle view of what is happening on the infrastructure development of the African continent. But here I'd like to zoom in to what is affecting us directly in South Africa, the Northern Corridor. What I'm going to ask here is that, Chairperson, when these projects have been implemented, how much was spent already? From which, where was the money coming from? Let us quantify that. And then, who was in control of the cash during that time in the implementation of this thing? So that person in control of the cash, who's in control of the person who's controlling the cash? That is for the team. Ensuring that the team is going where it's supposed to be, where it's supposed to go to. Because the issue of regional integration here is long overdue. Because it says that when we attract a truck from Shoprite to move from South Africa to Zambia, get to those guys to see what they did different forms. Before they reach their destination, and they reached different forms. So the issue of the integration must come into this thing. Because if we don't integrate, it means that the economy will not rise. But then the other issue here is that where this money is coming from. And then with the possibility of the funding which is coming from, with the commitment from China for COCAT in particular, is there any plan which was done to reinforce that type of funding so that it goes straight to the infrastructure? Because it was big. On each example, when you go to Kenya, Uganda, the first train was right. The bullet train, Metro Line, not from there. It's from Mombasa, straight to Nairobi. China is under that. China is under that. So on this issue of the internal, not some corridor, who's funding it? Did the FOCA come with anything to ensure that funding is reimbursed for that people? Because I think that's what the Honorable Kota is saying. It's true that our fellow people and the brothers and sisters are not there. They are indebted. They cannot get out of those products. But it means that we must get some sort of creative funding out of that. So on the issue in particular, I'm interested in China because, it's saving a lot of reserves. More than $3 trillion US dollars. So it means that if we really engage properly, we can be able to deal with the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kayan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes. My question is also around finances. I think I've been largely covered. Where is the money coming from? And given the state of the economy globally, what is the impact on progress with regard to some of the projects? It's actually so fascinating to see all the different projects on your map there. And we know that is a reality, it needs to happen. But where is the money coming from? I think Honorable Dakota also put it very nicely, is donor funds conditional? And then what is the role of the New Development Bank in all of this? Because that it was one of the objectives of the establishment of the bank to deal with projects. And you know, what is the role? Thank you.
Are you done, Honorable? Thank you very much. In the absence of more hands, Honorable Darling.
I'm good, thank you.
They look in your eyes.
No, thank you. I'm sorry I missed the presentation. It's just with the meeting, but I'm catching it as I go. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much. Page 4 of your presentation, Ambassador Asma, and thank you very much for a good presentation. It is the presentation actually notes some of the things that I noted in the earlier presentation about transport, the air transport, the road transport, the rail infrastructure, which was constructed in such a way that they served the colonial master. And what I was bemoaning was that in some of the countries who are not 60 years independent, some 40, some 30 years, these are the issues that they could have attended to. Because one observation that you made here, which was the last plan, is that Africa trades little with itself. And it could have been, you know, doing business in Africa between and among the states, it should be very near. And the road infrastructure or rail or air, but it is or through the dams could assist in this regard. And I see, but I don't see the presentation, but if I remember well, the document on Agenda 2063 said 12% of trade among African states. And but it's something like 46%, if I'm subject to correct it, with the countries outside. But depending on the type of commodity that they are trading on, it's something that the leadership could look at. But you see, what this document doesn't do, it doesn't then say in each of these areas, whether it's the road infrastructure or whatever, you need this amount of money, at least to do that. And you get what I mean? Even if it will be overheating by time, it doesn't say for the road infrastructure, for SADC or for South Africa, you need 2 billion times. And then for the skills, you need the following skills. It doesn't say that. And I think we need to put that improvement. Because the economies and the steering committee, which is advising the project, is the last thing, somewhere there, you remember that book, must make those kind of determinations. Because if you're going to deal with road infrastructure, you need civil and structural engineers. How many of those do we have in South Africa, in Zimbabwe? Pull them together. How many are you going to need those who are going to deal with shipbuilding and or electrification level, the boiler makers? But there are certain things that we can learn from the Afghaners, for instance. Where I grew up from, there are bridges that are called Amablokwamadaga, Italian bridges. You see, the architecture, actually, when you know of one, any other one that you see anywhere, so these are the bridges that were built by the Italians. So what they were doing, they would bring in those people, come and build this thing, open homes. That is at least from 19, or even before 1910, I think. And in 2010, the same kind of approach was done, if I remember well, about FIFA. You have to get a particular skill from France, the other one from somewhere. You don't hire them permanently. They must just deal with the stadium, and then they must go back home. So if we could identify the type of skills that are needed for some of the things,
pay them, then they can go back to their country. But at least we have addressed our challenges.
Then there's
I like the observations you were making on page 5 and page 4, that this is where we are. We are supposed to be somewhere else. It's quite shocking, but it's a very necessary observation. Now, on page 11, what is unblocking political partners? I thought Motu Mesta always economic. You see the Rwanda. And it's political bottleneck for ICT. Now, on page 13, the last bullet. The North-South Corridor has also been identified as a JIDA PAP. Is this PAP referring to the Pan-African Parliament? The last one is on it's on page 17. Bullet number 1, 2, 5, number 5. We see that South Africa's involvement helps to diversify economy and attract investment for industrialization and beneficiation. There are two things here. Whether we are talking about the role of South Africa in the North-South, or we're talking about the role of South Africa in the entire PICI project in terms of industrialization and beneficiation, and how this role of South Africa at least or is informed by the industrialization strategy of SADC, which was once presented to us, but of course not yet in the SADC PF. And the issue of financing that Honorable Lekota and Honorable Khadebe spoke about reminded me of what former Minister of Human Settlement, when I was serving as an MEC there, said to the people that the banks are a very sophisticated, educated Mashonisa. Do you know what is a Mashonisa? Ambassador. Okay. Then he went on to explain how you, if you get a credit, try to pay out as much as possible and get out. I think we're clarinetting for more than opening houses. So, we should know better about the World Bank and the IMF about these conditionalities that they impose. You get our money, but they kill your political economy. You can't take our money to do this and that. And we may not be out of the woods regarding the new development bank. Because if it says infrastructure, you can't kill your police and something else. So, I'm not sure whether in this instance African countries are looking at a self-financing model. And if so, who's going to host that money? We think that people are in the PICI, that to the extent that it connects two countries, that is from the A of South Africa to its Z, that is from the Bay Bridge to its Cape Town. This is how much you need. And then it crosses into Zimbabwe, from there to there, you need this much, another 2 rand. And from Zimbabwe to Lesotho, you need another 2 rand. Therefore, you need this 6 rand. And this thing must be done within that period, and the following skills are needed, and so is going to finance that. Or create a KDE for that. I don't see that here. And if I was speaking somewhere, again, going back to what I was saying, we can't cry for air. No. We, either, I'm talking about the whole continent. We can't. We shouldn't. Because we are not the only people who were colonized. Japan was colonized. China was colonized. in their work colonized. Look at where they are now. And there are things that when it's in Bay, Richard is scolding some of us in the book Architects of Poverty about the things that we can do, that people can do. We're gonna the point I'm making, I know it's I'm just saying, in some way or another, we must create our own kitty so that we don't remain dependent on an IMF, on a World Bank, and have the NDB. The IMF and the World Bank were created for the economic reconstruction of Europe after the Second World War. So the reconstruction of the continent's economy and something else, we must own up to some of the things as the leadership. But now, again, it's not your call to delve into that. Just making an observation about some of our weaknesses as the leadership in the continent. Thank you all to your ambassador. Okay. Or you also want to assist? Yeah.
I have to make two things to my ambassador.
Yeah.
I think the issue of financing is a critical issue.
Yeah.
But I think that we need to understand that when you talk about a number of these large infrastructure projects, you are not actually talking about using a public purse to do them. For example, we in South Africa have something called the DBSA, the Development Bank of Southern Africa. The Development Bank of Southern Africa has something that we call PDF, the Project to Prevention and Development Facility. Now, what the PDF does, or what it is meant for in the main, is to do what is called take project to bankability. So what you do, you have a project plan, and you do all of those things up to the stage where the project is bankable. When a project is bankable, you throw it out to investors. And generally, the investors will come and get the project. But it will eventually reach bankability. In other words, if you say you are going to build a toll gate or whatever from here up to beyond the bridge, and you design that and
then the older will have five.
No, the older doesn't find the game, the toll gate out there. So and when it has reached the bankability stage, it is because you have made the project such that when it is operating, it is profitable. So that is the stage of bankability. And most of these projects that we talk about in the RIDMP, for example, the Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan, which is the current infrastructure master plan, we can take our projects to PDF, to project preparation and development facility. The problem is that a lot of the time our companies fail to take their projects to bankability. And that is where you then have that the projects do not really advance. Just one last comment. There was this pleasure at that South Africa signed the Inga Treaty with the DRC. And the displeasure comes from the fact that South Africa has almost managed to ring-fence a number of projects and et cetera, for the national, for companies in the country and for companies in the region. But what I'm saying is that there has been a significant amount of displeasure from some of the countries that are beyond our sphere. So, yes, that we have managed to do that is good for us, is good for our companies. But there are quite a number out there who are not happy and who will try to deal with this process if it is possible. I just wanted to comment on that. Thank you.
Okay. I thought you were going to talk about self-financing beyond the DPSA by a group of countries, say within SADC or within the North-South Corridor, onwards. If you decide wanting to depend on the New Development Bank or the IMF or something else, are there attempts at saying this project from year to year up to higher exists, like how much kilometers from here to here, it will cost this much. Whether that money will come from the marginal fiscal or it will be put somewhere collectively by a group of countries to finance the project, so that the project doesn't stop, and or that it is over a particular channel. Anyone can answer.
Thank you. Actually, I think the whole question of finance, the politics of finance, we spend a whole day on the whole thing. Because, you know, on one hand, we should realize that the investment in infrastructure, I mean, the expenditure on infrastructure is not an expense. It's an investment for the future development of the continent. On the other hand, finance is also has a potential to be used to get political subjugation of countries. If we read the book, Confessions of Economic Hitman, we see how loans were used to get political servitude by many countries. But leaving that aside, I think it's difficult to generalize on the projects because there are so many different projects and each one has its own unique peculiarities. As Chopin has alluded to the important role that EBSA is playing. Now, for instance, if you look at the project in Egypt, it was wholly financed by the Egyptians and completed in record time. Now, here I do have a document here, a very detailed, it's a summary of all the projects on the PC, or the strategic importance and so on. It's 40 pages long, and what I will do is I will perhaps leave to the secretary to make copies and distribute it. It's an important one. It looks at the impact, the economic impact, the feasibility, and it breaks up each one into components. Where there are roads, who is involved, how it's financed, where there is a problem, and so on. I didn't want to for the committee with all the details, and I will make that available to the committee on it. But finance is a major hindrance, and how we handle that issue is not only relevant for our time, but for future generations as well. With regard to the question of whether the changes of government will lead to the end of the project, fortunately, most of these projects are not only continental, not only regional projects, but have a domestic imperative as well. So it's a national project that has been expanded. And as we see, that and also many of them are linked to legacies of presidents and so on. And they are institutionalized with many other, with banks and private sector and all that. Also, Chair, we have noticed lately with the new leadership in Africa, is there is now a growing realization in Africa with the younger leadership. The responsibility for development is ours. It's not going to depend on handouts from abroad and so on. So we take a multiple of new leadership, the new imperatives, and the realization of the economic benefits that accrue from these projects. I am confident that there is longevity of these projects in continuation of it. Of course, your observation of the Africa trend is very, very valid, and I concur with what you have said. But most of the questions with regard to finance is contained in the documents. The original documents would be volumes and volumes. What we are trying to do is summarize all of this in a concise way that could have perhaps answer all the questions. Thank you very much.
Who wrote the book Consensus of Economic Hitman?
This book was written by a CIA operative who was a developmental expert and had a change of heart. And he talks about, especially in Saudi Arabia and so on, where studies were done by Western countries for major energy projects. And of course, the money came from those countries as well, and how it was used to strangle the whole country. But
John Perkins.
John Perkins.
Yes.
Thank you very much. First, let's thank the presenters, Ambassador Shoghe and Ambassador Atmal and Advocate Mashabane in absentia. And honorable members for your constructive participation, for your worthy input. I think the meeting was quite educative. And each time the department presents, we realize that there is a lot that we must know. Now, we want to thank you very much for your input. The meeting is adjourned. There will be no lunch. There's no lunch, no? Or there's no free lunch.
No.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Yeah.